You know, when you're trying to figure out like how to improve things around Deer Park, LaPorte, Pasadena, it's like drinking from a fire hose, right?
Oh, yeah.
So much information coming at you all the time.
Right.
This deep dive we're doing, it's
Yeah.
about cutting through all that
Absolutely.
and focusing on what really matters for us right here.
Yeah. Today we're going to be looking at something that affects every single person in Southeast Houston, and that's housing.
Housing,
And specifically, how the decisions that are made locally, like by our city councils and planning departments, how those decisions actually shape whether or not we could find a decent place to live without, going broke.
Breaking the bank,
Right.
And to help us kind of wade through this,
Yeah.
we're using this toolkit called the Housing Ready City, a toolkit for local code reform.
This is a great resource. It's a practical guide with real concrete ideas that not only our local leaders can look at, but you and I as residents can look at and say, hey, maybe this could work here.
Maybe this is something we could actually do.
Right.
And that's what we want to do today,
Right.
right?
Absolutely.
We want to look at this toolkit and pull out
Yes, sir.
what are the things we can really do.
The most actionable, most important insights that can help make Deer Park, LaPorte, Pasadena a housing-ready city.
And so they start off this toolkit talking about the housing trap.
Yeah.
What do they mean by that?
Well, at the heart of the housing trap is this balancing act. And, ideally for housing to be affordable, prices need to come down. But on the other hand, the problem is that our financial system is so tied to housing values that if prices drop too much, that could be a real problem for the economy.
That's what we're always hearing, right?
It's a double-edged sword. But there's another side to this too. When housing prices are artificially inflated, that can actually hurt the local economy as well, because it makes it harder for businesses to attract employees because no one can afford to live here.
Oh, I see. So it's not just individuals
That's
like
right.
struggling to pay rent or a mortgage.
Exactly. It's
It's not.
affecting, it affects the whole community.
So what do we do about this? Like the toolkit,
Yeah,
is
well,
there a suggestion?
the toolkit says our local governments don't have to just wait for some, top-down solution from the state or federal government. They can take the lead. And the way they can take the lead is by focusing on increasing the supply of homes
More homes.
that are affordable, adaptable to different stages of life. And that can kind of be like an entry point for home ownership.
So that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
If there are more homes available,
Right.
that
Yeah.
puts some downward pressure
Right.
on the price.
More options eases the pressure without crashing the whole system.
And they talk about empowering local small-scale developers as well.
Yeah, we should definitely circle back to that. But for right now, the key thing is increasing the supply of homes.
So how do they suggest
Yeah, how do we do that?
that we do that locally?
Well, their main strategy is to reform local regulations. And they've got six policy changes that they recommend that local governments can implement to help create a housing-ready city.
Six. So that seems manageable.
Yeah.
We can get through six.
Let's take them one by one.
Okay, let's do it. What's the first one?
So the first one is to allow single-family home conversion to duplex or triplex buy, right? So basically, this means making it easier for homeowners to create additional living spaces within their existing properties. So, maybe adding an apartment above the garage or dividing a large house into two or three units.
Okay, so like an Old Town LaPorte, someone has a big house,
Right.
they could make a
Correct.
separate apartment for
Yeah.
like a family member or something.
Yeah, or even to rent out.
Or rent it out.
And the city would just make that process simple.
Okay, so what are the advantages of doing this?
Well, there are several big advantages. First, it just immediately increases the number of housing options that are available.
Think so.
Second, it gives homeowners a way to make some extra income, which can be really helpful for people on fixed incomes or young families. Third, these converted units tend to be more affordable than new construction.
That makes sense.
And then, maybe most importantly, these changes kind of blend in with the existing neighborhood.
So you're not like fundamentally changing
Exactly.
how Deer Park and Pasadena looks.
You're just making better use of what's already there.
And there's that story about Monty Anderson in Dallas.
Oh, yeah.
And his multi-generational roommate house.
Yeah, so what he did was he took this big old house.
Uh-huh.
And he adapted it to house five single adults.
Okay.
Each with their own entrance bathroom kitchenette.
Wow.
Now, technically,
yeah,
multi-unit homes weren't allowed in that area.
Yeah.
But he found a way to make it work.
Okay.
And here's the really interesting part.
Okay.
He bought this kind of rundown house,
yeah,
for like $300,000.
Yeah.
Did the conversions.
Yeah.
And the value of the property jumped over $1.2 million.
Wow. So you're saying there's like a lot of potential.
Untapped potential.
Just sitting there.
Yeah.
Okay. So not only did the property value go up.
Right.
But the city didn't have to pay for any new roads or sewers or anything like that.
No new infrastructure.
So that's a pretty good argument for making this kind of change.
Yeah. And Anderson himself, he says it just doesn't make sense,
mm-hmm,
that we don't allow these adaptations everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, there are all these big houses that are underutilized.
Yeah.
And this is a way to maximize their use,
uh-huh,
without, you know, changing the feel of the neighborhood.
Right.
The toolkit says these outdated zoning rules.
Yeah.
Are really preventing us from doing this.
Okay, so that's number one.
That's number one.
What about number two?
Number two is to permit backyard cottages.
Okay.
Or ADUs,
yeah,
in all residential zones.
Okay.
So these are like,
yeah,
smaller independent living units,
mm-hmm,
that are built on the same property as a single family home.
Okay.
Like in the backyard.
So like a little guest house.
Yeah, or a tiny home.
Okay.
In the back.
So you could have one of those, uh-huh, in like the Bayshore area of LaPorte.
Yeah.
Okay, and what's the good thing about these?
Well, they're a low-impact way to increase the number of housing options.
Okay.
And they're really flexible. You can use them for aging parents.
Uh-huh.
You can use them for young adults who are just starting out.
Yeah.
You can rent them out.
Yeah.
You can downsize into them.
Okay.
And they usually fit in pretty well,
uh-huh,
with the existing neighborhood.
Okay.
Because they use space that's often underutilized anyway.
Right. The backyard.
The backyard, exactly.
And there's this story in the toolkit,
yeah,
about Fayetteville, Arkansas,
right,
a family and a backyard cottage.
Yeah, this is a really interesting story.
Okay.
About how these policies can really make a difference.
Okay.
So this family had an aging mother who had dementia.
Okay.
And instead of putting her in a nursing home,
uh-huh,
they built a backyard cottage for her on their property.
Okay.
So she could still live independently, but be close to her family.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. And it was much better for her well-being,
uh-huh,
and for their family connections.
Okay. But they had some trouble, right?
Yeah. Initially, they ran into some zoning hurdles.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because of the zoning rules at the time, the cottage had to be connected to the main house in a certain way.
Okay.
And it couldn't have a full stove,
huh,
because they didn't want it to be classified as a separate dwelling unit.
I see.
So these little regulations,
yeah,
can create big problems for families, mm, who are just trying to do the right thing.
Right. So Fayetteville eventually changed their zoning, though?
They did.
You make it easier.
Yeah, they made it much simpler to build ADUs.
Okay, so that's something.
And that's something that Deer Park, LaPorte, Pasadena,
yeah,
could learn from.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so ADUs.
Yeah.
Another good way to expand housing.
Yep.
Okay, what about number three?
Number three is to legalize starter homes in all residential zones.
Starter homes.
Yeah. So these are the,
yeah,
smaller,
yeah,
more affordable homes,
uh-huh,
that, you know, historically a lot of families used to start out in.
Right. Like a young couple.
Exactly.
Or someone new to Pasadena working in petrochemicals.
Yeah. Or just starting their career.
Gets their first house.
Yeah. 400 to 800 square feet.
Okay. Why aren't we building more of those now?
Well, it's mostly because of zoning laws.
Okay.
And financial incentives that favor larger, more expensive homes.
I see.
So legalizing starter homes just means,
yeah,
getting rid of those zoning barriers,
okay,
that prevent people from building smaller homes,
okay,
on smaller lots.
Okay.
These homes provide an entry point into homeownership,
yeah,
for more people.
Right.
And they can be designed to be expanded later on.
Okay. And they give an example,
yes,
in the toolkit of Mark and Fawn Gottschalk's shotgun house in Pensacola.
Yeah.
Why is that relevant?
So their house is 850 square feet.
Okay.
It's on a small lot.
Uh-huh.
In a walkable neighborhood.
Okay.
And when they bought it,
yeah,
it was affordable enough,
yeah,
that they could update the kitchen and the bedrooms.
Okay.
And they could even expand to the attic later or add a backyard cottage.
Oh, wow.
And the reason they were able to do that,
yeah,
is because Pensacola changed its zoning rules.
Okay, so it's like we're making it harder for
Right.
people to do the
The
things.
toolkit says these small homes used to be common in our cities, but now they're often illegal.
That's so weird.
It's ironic, Andrew. The very homes that helped so many people become homeowners are now illegal to build.
Okay, so what's the fourth one?
The fourth one is to eliminate minimum lot size requirements in existing neighborhoods.
Minimum lot sizing.
Yeah, so these requirements dictate how small a lot can be before you can build on it.
Okay, so how does that affect affordability?
Well, they can make development really difficult and drive up costs, especially in established neighborhoods, like we have in Deer Park, La Porte, Pasadena, because these neighborhoods already have the infrastructure.
Yeah, roads and the sewers and
But
everything.
exactly. So if you remove these minimum lot size requirements, you can use the land more efficiently, and you can build smaller, more affordable homes without changing the character of the neighborhood.
So it's not about cramming a bunch of tiny houses
No, not at all.
onto a piece of land.
It's about giving homeowners the flexibility to add a smaller home to their lot, or build a backyard cottage, or subdivide a larger lot to create a new housing option. So it's about letting the community grow in a more organic and affordable way.
And the toolkit talks about South Street cottages in Fayetteville.
Yeah.
What happened there?
So in that project, they were able to build 28 homes on a piece of land where the old zoning would have only allowed seven.
Wow, that's a huge difference.
And these homes sold really quickly at prices that people could afford. And a lot of the buyers were young families, retirees, single professionals.
So people who might not have been able to afford to live there otherwise.
Right.
Okay, so that's a great example.
Yeah, it shows how getting rid of these outdated rules can really make a difference.
Okay, what about number five?
Number five is to repeal parking mandates for housing.
Parking mandates.
Yeah.
Okay, so those
So
are.
these are the rules that say you have to have a certain number of parking spaces for every new home,
I've heard about that.
regardless of whether you need them or not.
So how does getting rid of those help make housing more affordable?
Well, because those parking requirements add a lot of cost to housing projects. First of all, you have to use valuable land for parking.
Instead of for homes.
Right. And then the cost of building those parking spaces gets passed on to the people who buy or rent the homes. And a lot of times, especially in walkable areas or places with good public transportation,
Like Pasadena, some of it.
those parking spaces just sit empty.
So if you let the developers or the homeowners decide how much parking they need,
Exactly.
then it could be more affordable.
It gives them the flexibility to respond to the actual demand. It doesn't mean there won't be any parking, but it means you don't have to build more than you need.
And they talk about Finley Street cottages in Atlanta.
Yes.
What happened there?
So this project is a great example of how parking mandates can actually prevent affordable housing. The developers wanted to build these small, walkable homes, but the city's parking rules would have forced them to use so much land for parking that the project wouldn't have been financially viable and the rents would have been too high.
I see.
So the city ended up reducing the parking requirements, and that allowed the project to move forward. And the rents ended up being much more affordable.
So just that one little change
Exactly.
made a big difference.
It can make a big difference.
Okay, so getting rid of parking mandates could really help
You could.
in places that are walkable.
Or have good public transportation.
Okay, what about number six?
Number six is to streamline the approval process.
Streamline approvals.
Yeah, because you know those long, complicated permitting and approval processes.
I've heard about those.
Yeah, they're a major obstacle to anyone who's trying to build new housing.
Like you hear about projects that just get stuck
Exactly.
for years.
Stuck in red tape for months or years.
So how does simplifying that process help?
Well, it just makes it easier and faster for people to build homes. So you get more homes built, which helps with affordability, and it reduces the cost because time is money.
Time is money.
All right.
And the toolkit mentions South Bend, Indiana,
Yeah.
and their proactivism.
Right.
What is
But
that?
so South Bend, they've really tried to be proactive in working with developers. And one of the things they do is they offer pre-approved housing plan.
Pre-approved.
Yeah, so these are designs that the city's already looked at and approved.
Okay.
So if you want to build a home
yeah.
using one of these plans,
yeah.
the permitting process is super fast.
Okay.
Like they say they can permit a pre-approved plan
yeah.
in 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
20 minutes.
That's crazy.
Compared to what we hear about,
yeah.
it's amazing.
Yeah.
And this helps guide development
huh?
in a way that's consistent
okay.
with the character of the neighborhood.
So it's like the city's not just a gatekeeper.
Exactly.
They're like a partner in this.
They're a partner.
Okay.
In building a healthy housing market.
Okay. And they talk about Rebecca Kick.
Yes.
The deputy city manager of Kalamazoo,
yeah.
Michigan.
She's been working on this for a decade.
A decade? That's a long time.
Yeah.
So what does she do?
Well, she started with small changes.
Okay.
Incremental changes.
Yeah.
She really focused on getting the community involved.
Uh-huh.
And she worked to empower local small-scale builders.
Okay.
So in Kalamazoo, they ended up legalizing ADUs.
Okay.
They reduced parking minimums.
Uh-huh.
They reduced lot sizes.
Okay.
They created pre-approved plans.
No.
And they even created a housing development fund.
Okay.
To help smaller developers.
Wow. So what were the results of all that?
Well, they've seen more homes being built.
Okay.
And they've seen more interest from local builders. Mm-hmm. And Carrick's whole philosophy is about
yeah.
seeing our community, building the community,
uh-huh.
empowering residents
okay.
to be part of the solution.
Okay.
And her advice to other leaders is just mm-hmm. start with the next smallest thing.
That's good advice
yeah.
for us here
yeah.
in Southeast Houston.
It's doable.
So just to recap,
yeah.
the six policy changes are
allowing single family home conversions, permitting backyard cottages,
uh-huh.
legalizing starter homes.
Yeah.
Eliminating minimum lot sizes,
yeah.
repealing parking mandates,
yeah.
and streamlining the approval process.
Okay, and all of those are things our well, local governments
absolutely
can do
right here in our communities.
It's amazing to think
yeah.
how much power we have
right?
at the local level.
Yeah, we could really shape our neighborhoods.
Yeah, so for everyone listening,
yeah.
in Deer Park, LaPorte, Pasadena.
Think about these ideas.
Yeah, how could these changes benefit our communities?
What small change?
Yeah.
Could make a big difference.
Yeah, this is our chance to build our community.
Together.
So talk to your neighbors.
Yeah.
Talk to your representatives.
This is how we make a difference.
Yeah, and if you've gotten something out of this deep dive,
yeah.
you can support future ones.
Absolutely.
By going to thinkandactlocally.com/loanate.
The link is in the show notes.
Link is in the show notes.